This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee, and back this week from ESPN 1000 in Chicago, he is Jonathan Hood. Had a lot of things going on. Again, there's no offseason. It always felt like kind of the early part of football season until you got the Survivor Series, you know, with WWE. It's like, okay, we're just kind of treading water, not really the case anymore. A lot of things to jam in before Survivor Series, and that kind of seems like it might even kick off WrestleMania season for WWE this year with so many things that they've got going on. But our question starts here because we did have Crown Jewel. We have a lot of things going on in AEW. What do you think, Jay Hood, was the best pro wrestling show of the week?
Gabe Neitzel, there's so much product out there. It's all over the place. You think about SmackDown in Saudi Arabia leading into Crown Jewel, then Raw being taped there. And by the way, this whole thing of, oh, you can't tape shows because there's too many spoilers. Nobody cares. They'll watch it when they want to watch it. And no one cares about the Meltzer spoilers. It does not matter. Because if you want to watch it, you will watch it. And the same thing
with Dynamite. And to that point, I think that's a big reason why WWE is ending up at Netflix. Yes, they got a boatload of money, but Netflix is betting that, hey, we can turn this onto, you know, hey, watch Raw whenever you want to watch Raw, just like anything else they have on Netflix.
Yeah, and so live taped, we're wrestling fans. We want to go see it, we know where to find it, and we will watch it. Dynamite in New Hampshire was very good as well. I would say that for my money, I think that Crown Jewel was the best show I saw this week. And here's the thing. Sometimes we're not going to be able to be satisfied with the entire card, because I was not. But I just know one thing, two matches that we didn't need to see, we saw, and one of them was Gunther against Cody Rhodes for the Men's Crown Jewel Championship. And then to be able to see something that we thought, okay, this is going to be good, but it's actually better than I thought it was going to be, is Andrade, Carmelo, and LA Knight. You know, we were wondering, what does Carmelo Hayes and Andrade need? They need something in this. Oh, that's right, LA Knight. That's what they needed. They need LA Knight. That's what made it better. So to me, if those were the two best matches I saw on the card, then to me, that was a complete card for me. I thought that they wrestled hard, the men and women on that show, and to me, that was the best thing I saw.
I kind of lean towards Monday Night Raw. I just really liked and enjoyed the progression, a lot of the storylines that we saw. Obviously, getting more depth to Sammy and the Bloodline and his interaction that he had with the Usos, and Jay dramatically saying he saw Jimmy Uso, he saw Jay Uso, he saw Sammy Uso, and getting that pop from the crowd. I really liked Io Sky, honestly, because I didn't see it coming, winning the Women's Battle Royal on Monday night. And I enjoyed the men's four-way that they had to close out the show with Damian Priest eventually winning that to become the new number one contender for Gunther's World Heavyweight Championship. So I really liked the way they kind of progressed a lot of different things. They also progressed with the New Day and kind of continuing to tease that breakup, which apparently they're getting their own, which just screams breakup, right? They're getting their own Monday Night Raw 10-year anniversary, celebrating the New Day type of episode coming up. So I kind of lean towards Monday Night Raw, and maybe it's because of those things that you mentioned. It was a deeper card than what we're used to seeing, I think, for Crown Jewel. But I think that's also because, well, the Crown Prince is, you know, he's paying quite a bit of money for WWE to come over there. I don't think Triple H would have been able to get away with his just nice, tight six-match card that he's been doing with a lot of these different PLEs.
Hey, you know, watching just everything around Crown Jewel, Gabe, I think you noticed this as well. Man, this is their WrestleMania, and it's not just because of the in-ring, just the stuff around it, like the fan fest and all the, like, the Undertaker's old outfits and all this stuff. It's like, boy, they're laying this out like they would do for a WrestleMania or like one of their tentpole, you know, PLEs, where if you've never seen WWE before, here's the history of WWE. It's like going to, you know, an all-star game for basketball or whatever, right? Or Major League Baseball. Here's the history of our company. I thought they did a really good job with it. And again, we've said this many times on this show, Crown Jewel has been skippable for the most part for you and I. You know, well, Brian will watch anything. But for you and I, it's been skippable. But there were stakes. And I think that's the reason why we're invested. There were stakes with these championships.
Did you notice, though? I mean, we called it the Crown Jewel Championship. Even though they were still in Saudi Arabia, Liv Morgan did not make an appearance with it. She comes out on Monday Night Raw, even though she won that championship. Michael Cole made the note of, oh, you'll see that she doesn't have it because it's a part of the, what are they calling it, the WWE experience that they yes. have, whatever zone they have in Saudi Arabia. Apparently it's on display there. So I thought at least for the week they would come out with them, especially being in Saudi Arabia for Monday Night Raw. But nope, Liv Morgan just coming out with her regular world championship because the Saudi belt, the big Saudi belt, is just on display somewhere else.
That must be a shoot. That must actually be valuable. They don't want any knucklehead wrestlers going around the country who's like, I'm the champion. Oh, we'll steal that. I mean, right? Seriously. I think reason why.
I mean, think about even somebody like Chris Jericho, a seasoned veteran, has left championship belt places. Like, it seems like that's not one. And maybe the you know, maybe Saudi Arabia also threw a little bit of money towards that thing to make it as valuable as it was. But yeah, making it on display instead of actually having someone to carry it around. So I'm not expecting Cody Rhodes to show up tomorrow night on SmackDown with his. I'm guessing that's also on display.
That's exactly right. And you are correct. While you're in the country, even if it goes to some props part of WWE, hold us to the side when we come back for Raw, have the belt to show, hey, I won the championship. Nope, not even that. The country took it over. Nope, it's ours. Oh, okay, yeah. Fine.
Well, I'm sure she has. I'm sure Liv has no problem with that. But also, again, when it comes to Monday Night Raw, I really like that we got to saw again more Bianca and more. You know, I think more of that women's tag division being on display, even though they had their match at Crown Jewel, but being them also being involved. You know, potentially teasing at a split up between those two eventually, where Liv was trying to, drive that stake in between Jade and Bianca, I thought was really cool. So I really enjoyed Monday Night Raw, but I thought Dynamite was pretty good last night as well. They put together a solid episode, kind of continuing a lot of the different storylines that they have there as well.
As far as Dynamite in Manchester, New Hampshire, just the last couple weeks that I've been noticing, Gabe, they are really putting a concerted effort on being different than they have been. The stories are there. There's been criticism online, like you've always seen, like, oh, AEW's trying to be like WWE with their video packages. No, all sports does that, pal. We all do it. Like baseball, basketball, football, they all do it. You have to be able to say, in case you missed this, here's what happened last game, or here's what happened last week, or here's a video package looking forward to something to come on the show or next week. They have done a terrific job. That's not how they used to be, but they realize, like, how else do you grow your sport? How else do you grow your business to let people know, here's what you missed, and now let's move forward and just go along with the storylines we're going with right now. It's a better show than it has been in quite some time for me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that, like you said, they've got a number of different stories going. Adam Cole, MJF, like being able to keep MJF engaged with obviously pre-taped segments, but they're playing him back because he's off. Happy Gilmore 2 is the movie that he's a part of. So, he's still very much involved and the storyline, going on with him and Adam Cole and Roderick Strong. Obviously we now know the name of the old BCC is now the Death Riders, right? Like they had that angle continue with Orange Cassidy that had, again, has just been a through line through all the AEW programming as of late. I just really have enjoyed everything that they've kind of put together. Again, are they going to be, not everything's going to be a winner, just like before WWE, not everything's going to be a winner, but if you hit a couple of really good ones, it's going to keep me engaged throughout the course. And then, oh, by the way, you're still putting on some really good wrestling matches in there as well. And the Hurt Syndicate is just adding a lot of intrigue with a lot of different wrestlers as well, right? Like you've got the match now with Bobby Lashley and Swerve Strickland. They're teasing stuff with Ricochet. What are they going to do there? Kind of making a couple of different, teases of, oh, hey, what's going on? And MVP saying, hey, if you've got my business card, that's like a golden ticket. And, that kind of being a callback to some other things that we've seen him and different people that he's been handing out his business card to. So I think they've done a better job with a little bit of their storytelling as of late.
Do we need a Happy Gilmore 2?
No.
Mm-mm. I don't think so either.
No.
I mean, it's still quoted on the golf course and everywhere else, right?
Yeah.
All the great lines from Happy Gilmore. And I'm thinking to myself, again, another example where you don't need a sequel. As a golf guy, Are you insulted that there is a Happy Gilmore 2, that they're trying to get away from the classic Happy Gilmore by having a sequel?
Like, does Adam Sandler really need the money? Doesn't he have other... I don't know, man. Like, it seemed... There wasn't really a cliffhanger, you know, 25 years ago for Happy Gilmore, right? Or, I mean, closer to 30 years ago at this point. There wasn't really a cliffhanger. It was pretty cut and dry, you know. Happy won the tournament, got his grandma's house back. It's not like grandma can be a character now. Like, grandma's not still around. Like, she was such a great character. Like, I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're doing. That being said, am I probably going to go see it? Yeah. Am I going to be disappointed? Absolutely. But they're still going to get my $20 or whatever when I go see it.
You know, the key to all of this is, if you're going to have a sequel, there has to be stuff that's quotable. If I walk out of the theater and watch this and there's nothing that rings true, or nothing that we put on our radio shows as sound bites, or especially your golf show, if in 2025, if you don't have a sound bite from Happy Gilmore 2 on your golf show on ESPN Milwaukee, let me tell you something. Then it's the shits.
Yeah, then it failed. Then it absolutely failed. Yeah. Moving on, because we were talking about AEW here, so let's go ahead and dive into this. The three count, the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. Let's go ahead and dive into number one this week. As I mentioned, we now know the name of the old BCC. I think we're just kind of calling him BCC out of habit, even though we probably knew it wasn't. And well, now they are the Death Riders. John Moxley and the Death Riders are the new faction in AEW trying to tear down AEW. What do you think? What do you think the direction here is of the Death Riders?
Well, you know, I like what I'm seeing here, because let's go back, because we were on the air when John Moxley was able to win the AEW championship. First of all, beating Darby Allin, but then being able to beat Bryan Danielson for the championship. And by the way, we have not seen the championship since. It's in that little attaché case that's being held on by Shafir. So she's got it. So it has not seen the light of day since he won it. Okay, so that's ominous. That's interesting, because we've never seen that before. You win a championship, you don't see the title. Okay, that's great. Secondly, so this whole thing with Wheeler Yuta, man, he's used as a pawn. This is what we're seeing, Gabe. It's just like, hey, man, if I want to pulmonize your neck, just to bring Orange Cassidy in, I'm going to do it. If I
want to use the man as bait.
Yeah. I mean, and he's good with it, though, apparently. Yep. He's not held hostage. He's not. So that elevates Pac. Thank God we can see him on multiple shows now. We actually can see him. It's not the one-off. He goes over the pond. He's injured, whatever. We see him regularly now. We see Claudio. We see him on a regular basis. So to me, Gabe, this is going someplace. We all thought that the higher power would be Shane McMahon. Looks like it's not that just yet. But I'll tell you one thing. What's happening right now, I saw it on Collision on Saturday, watched it again, Dynamite on Wednesday. It's become must-see to see what Mox is going to see, what he's going to say, one. And two, who are they going to fight with? I think it's very interesting right now.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think an underrated thing, and I know we made fun of it when he made note of the footwork of Marina Shafir. Right. But like, I think she's been fantastic. Like, she hasn't said a word, but she's like the enforcer, despite having Claudio, despite having Moxley. Like, Claudio regarded as one of the strongest, you know, pound for pound in all of professional wrestling. Moxley being this crazy man that he is in professional wrestling. Yet the enforcer seems like it's Marina Shafir. She just stands there looking menacing, holding on to that briefcase, you know, that has the AEW World Championship in it. Doesn't say much, if anything, but I think she also kind of looks at the entire ensemble. I am wildly intrigued. I'm intrigued with the direction this goes. I'm assuming that Orange Cassidy does not win at Full Gear later this month. So that's just going to continue to build it. That's just going to continue to grow it. My one fear, after what happened, not this week, but the previous week on Dynamite, is that the Young Bucks come back. I'm hoping that the Young Bucks do not come back and are somehow saviors in this story. Because to me, the point of doing what you're doing is having some of these, I mean, it's been a talking point, whether it's been Daniel Garcia, whether it's been John Moxley talking about some of the young guys, or Orange Cassidy. Hey, you know, they're making this about the young guys and how the young guys need to step up. So if the Bucks come back from whatever hiatus they end up being on after losing the AEW World Tag Team Championships, shredding papers and getting out of Dodge, again, 2 weeks ago on Dynamite. If they come back as the saviors of this story, then I think it's going to fall flat. But if you use this to elevate a Wheeler Yuta, and I know Orange isn't a young guy, but still, like Orange Cassidy or a Daniel Garcia or some of these other young talents that you have, that's the purpose of this story. And I'm hoping it is a very long-term story. I hope this is a very long, satisfying burn for AEW. It's off to me to a great start.
So a question. So we don't expect to see the Young Bucks in full gear in any capacity, correct?
Correct.
Okay. At least that's how it should be booked. They're not, they lost the tag team championship.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're not in the title picture. The way they left was interesting. And by the way, you don't have to force feed them on the card because you have other stories that are compelling. The other thing is I want to ask you about is, because so you're the Jon Moxley fan on this show.
Yes.
I know you haven't really talked about it lately, because I know you've moved on. There's other wrestlers that you really like, but we know you as in the audience knows you as the Jon Moxley fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to know how you feel about Moxley now. I've said on several platforms now that it's almost like I don't even remember Dean Ambrose being so bad on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast and part of the Shield. It seems like it's so behind him that from his New Japan stuff to his AEW stuff, to me, he's like an AEW guy. I just want to know what you think about where he's going now, because to me, I know he's supposed to be the heel and says that AEW, we're going to burn it to the ground, but he still comes across as a cool heel to me.
Yeah. He's out there with the white t-shirt. The one thing I said last week, the one thing I really enjoy about this, and because we didn't know what to call them, me and Brian are like, we think they're BCC. I don't know what to call them. But now that we know that they're the Death Riders, I'm hoping that they don't come out in Death Rider t-shirts. I like the fact, well, because again, it just doesn't make sense that Shop AEW would be selling Death Rider merch if they're trying to tear down the company, right? So the fact that they're just coming out in a white t-shirt or just plain t-shirts the way that they have been coming out in, like, I like that part of it. As far as Mox, like, I first loved him as Dean Ambrose because he was the leader. He was the voice of the Shield. Like when they first started the Shield, it seemed like, okay, maybe he's the one that really breaks out of this and can kind of go on and do different things. And they had him do a lot of different goofy things after the Shield broke up. And I think you kind of saw, again, a lot of the frustrations he had. But yeah, it's hard to think of him as a WWE guy at this point because he's been so good in New Japan and AEW. To me, he's the MVP of, you know, if we were, you know, since we're 5 years into the AEW thing, to me, he's the MVP of AEW, because anytime you need something, like a lot of the compelling storylines, a lot of the compelling things that they've done, they turn to Jon Moxley, and he is just going to always step up. And I think he's doing some of the best mic work in his career during the promos that they're cutting, the backstage stuff, the live stuff, being ominous yet being intriguing. It's a tough line to me to kind of straddle, because you can get far too ominous and far too vague the way that Bray Wyatt did in his last run in WWE. It's like, okay, where is this going? I don't quite understand. Where he's clearly, you know, got a direction for this. I think he's doing fantastic work. He's still one of my favorites. And like you said, it's hard to boo Jon Moxley because he is that cool heel. Like because you know he's going to do something fun. He's going to do something that you enjoy. Obviously, I think he's going to get booed out of respect, because AEW tends to be a little bit of a smarter crowd. Like, okay, you're the heel, we're going to boo you, but it's more respect booing than we actually don't like you booing.
You know, he's not the biggest guy, but he looks big in the ring, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah.
Like we saw this on Wednesday where he's got, is it Darby in the Bulldog choke? I don't think that was it. He came up behind on somebody, and the way he stood up, I was like, he looks much bigger and more menacing. Just in the white t-shirt and just coming from behind trying to choke guys. I like this. I could tell that this is all Moxley. This is going through his brain. I can't.
Yep.
It's not like we can give Tony Khan credit for this. Tony Khan allows this to happen, but it seems like this is in the dark mind, the dark arts of Jon Moxley. I'm interested. I'm really compelled with it because, and so I did doubt it at the beginning, because to be fair, because I said, it's really difficult, Gabe, to have the story of everything that you watch every Wednesday and Saturday sucks. This sucks. Just so you know, this sucks. And so I'm here to fix it. That doesn't work all the time. Like NWO would come in and say, we're taking over. We're coming from Vince Vince has sent us here to take WCW over because it's Southern and it sucks. Now, again, they had a windfall of cash and it worked for a few years, at least for 83 weeks. We know that much. But it's difficult. It's difficult to say, hey, I know that you enjoy all the flippy shit and you enjoy AEW, but yeah, it kind of sucks. And I'm here to fix it. So hopefully it works out for them on the other side.
Yeah, we've seen WWE try to pull this off unsuccessfully. And yeah, like you said, once you get past it, I enjoy it as the through line, right? Like, hey, we're here, we're making changes, we're making wholesale changes. That's what we're here for. And, you know, they're clearly going to add to the group, whether that's some sort of other leader. Again, Shane McMahon's been rumored, shot down. It seems like we just kind of ride the seesaw in that. But I'm guessing some of these other guys are going to join. And again, eventually they'll start to peel off. But I think that this needs to be a very long-term story. Like, Mox probably needs to be for a pretty long time. I'm not saying he goes on a Roman Reigns three-year run and kind of holding that hostage. Maybe you might be able to pull that off with Mox because he's still there every week. But I don't think this should be a, oh, we hit World's End or we hit, you know, we hit Wrestle Kingdom or whatever they're calling the one they're doing in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think we hit, you know, the end of December, early January in this storyline. No, this thing needs to really continue for a healthy amount of time, whether that's all in, whether that's all out. You could maybe talk me into doing it in Vegas at Double or Nothing because that's such a tentpole of a show for AEW. But this needs to be a long-term story and not necessarily the response to what the Bloodline saga has been for WWE, because I think that's been the best long-term story WWE has ever told. But I think it needs to be like, when we look back on 5 years, just, oh man, remember the Death Riders? I think this needs to be a consistent long-term story and not just a six-month thing that AEW tried.
And to be clear, I know we might be jumping the gun and Brian will not be happy that I'm asking the question now because we still got a few weeks away. So to be clear, so Orange Cassidy's not winning at Full Gear, correct?
Correct.
He's heating them up, though. I'll tell you one thing.
Oh, yeah.
Tell you one thing. Whatever you think about this, all these guys have been around for 4 or 5 years. They're in the spotlight now, and it's almost like Blanco get off the pot, right? Because
yeah.
Orange Cassidy's talking more. There was a great interview that we conducted with him. And so he's becoming more and more the face of AEW on the babyface side.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I don't even think this is necessarily for Orange, because Orange is already, to me, one of the biggest stars. Like, when he was international champion for the longest time, if I didn't hear his theme music to start a show, you'd wonder what the heck's going on a Wednesday night. Like, oh, yeah. Well, how come Orange isn't wrestling tonight? To me, this is more to elevate the Daniel Garcias, not even necessarily the Darbys, because Darby's been put in some really big spots because of his relationship with Sting and the way that he was featured on the way out. So I look at this as a way to elevate the Wheeler Utes, the Daniel Garcias, you know, and we'll see who else along the way. You know, this would be, to me, a really potentially good spot for Ricky Starks if he ever showed up on AEW television, right? Like, that would be a good spot for him.
Ah, Gabe, it's too bad that these kids didn't grow up, I would say, like 20 years ago. Could you just imagine Darby Allin propelling down on the Tonight Show just out of nowhere? Instead of coming through the curtain, you know, here he goes, and he's propelling right there, and he's right there with, unfortunately, Jay Leno. But you understand. Like, or like Letterman. Letterman loved wrestling, by the way. Letterman
loved
Indianapolis, so he loved wrestling. Imagine like a Darby Allin propelling from the ceiling and sitting down around the couch, or like guys like John Moxley and, you know, Orange Cassidy. Those are like actual characters that would really be good on like the late night circuit back in the day.
Yeah, so I personally have loved the direction of this. I can't wait to see where they go with it. And even, again, it's going to be, okay, after Moxley presumably beats Orange Cassidy, okay, what's next? What's next for Cassidy? Are they going to put him on the shelf? Are they going to do an injury storyline? Is he going to survive? Like, I just think there are so many different ways, the way that they've built this up, that they certainly can go. Number two this week is, earlier today, we had an opportunity to catch up with a man who is very well traveled, been in a number of different companies, and now is wrestling for MLW. He is going to be in Jay Hood's neck of the woods, as MLW is going to be in Chicago this weekend. So we had an opportunity to catch up with Bobby Fish. Always excited to talk to guests here on GKW and excited to bring in our next one because MLW is going to be in Chicago this weekend as we welcome in Bobby Fish. Bobby, thank you so much for the time, man.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate y'all having me on. I am jazzed to say the least. I am ready to go. Chicago always been a spot I've loved to perform in. And I get to do that with MLW, and I could not be more excited about what we have going on with MLW to begin with. So let's do it.
Yeah, well, our guy Jay Hood is in Chicago. So what makes Chicago, because again, whether it's WWE, AEW, ROH, like, any time a company goes there, it always seems like the crowd is going to be really hot. And I know MLW's been there a couple of times now as well. I'm guessing it's more of the same when it comes to the crowd.
It really is. And it is. It's just that. It's the crowd. They always bring it. And like, we feed off of their energy the same way that they feed off of ours. You know, you come through that curtain and those people paid their hard-earned money to come and see you, to escape from what their everyday is. And you owe them a show. And in that same regard, when they give us the energy that they provide, I can't help it. Even if I didn't want to give them a show, I'm under the spell. You know, it's going to happen. And Chicago is one of those places.
Bobby, what was the first time that a wrestler walked up to you and said, "Hey, man, I really like your match. You got something going for yourself." That had to be a first time where you're like, wow, someone noticed my match and said, "Boy, I think I can really do this for a living."
Well, that last statement that you just said, like, I can really do this for a living, what that takes me back to when I started working for Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. It was a unique situation where I thought, because I got hooked up with Noah through Harley Race. That's where they saw me. It was a Harley Race camp, and the invitation was supposed to be to come over and train in the dojo for 3 months. And that was it. And when I got booked to go, I realized that my flight itinerary was 3 weeks, and I was a bit confused. I called Harley, and Harley in his, you know, gruffled voice said, "I don't know, kid, you'll have to figure it out." And that was about as much light as he shed on it. I went over there, and I realized within the first day, like, oh my God, I'm wrestling on TV tomorrow night. And for me at that time, that was my first TV exposure, period. Now, it happened to be in Japan, but I was going to wrestle on TV for the very first time. And I did, and it went, I didn't get kicked out of the place. So it was that moment that I realized, like, wow. And I finished the tour. I was on tour with the company. They brought me in just to start working as a wrestler, not to come in and train in the dojo. And that was where the confusion was, is when they saw me there, they thought, oh, this guy's ready. Like, he's working somewhere else already, obviously. And I really wasn't. I was only doing American Indies. So that was my first inkling, because I got paid, I don't remember what, but it was in the thousands to be there. Plus, I got flown back and forth to and from Japan. I was like, can I do this? And that was really my first light bulb moment of like, hey, there's something here.
Well, MLW coming to Chicago, Bobby Fish joining us again this Saturday, November 9th. As somebody who has wrestled all over the world for a number of different promotions, what can people expect when MLW is in Chicago?
MLW right now to me is like, we're that dark horse, but we're doing all the right things and we got all the right pieces of the puzzle. I'm going to say coming together, because we're still adding things. You know, I got a chance to, I was talking about Noah previously, I got a chance to wrestle with Kenta for MLW, and that was a revisitation for me. So there's a personal story there. But then you got like Donovan Dijak coming in now, and he is making so much friggin' noise. Not that he can ever be inconspicuous at like 7 foot whatever, and doing moonsaults, but it's exciting, man. You got Riddle, guys like Tom Lawler. We just there's so many pieces to this puzzle that are coming together at just the right time. And I'm biased in this opinion, but the Rogue Horsemen, we have arrived, and we are about to make things, if nothing else, we're going to make things really, really interesting. I love nothing more than pissing people off, getting under their skin. And I'm going to say the same thing about my boys, you know, BRG, CW, and Brock Anderson. The Rogue Horsemen have arrived, and we are here to make a mess if we have to. But one way or the other, like, you are not going to forget, like, oh, okay, Horsemen are here.
Yeah, MLW is on YouTube weekly. It is sold out at the Cicero Stadium in Chicago. But again, watch the show on YouTube. It's something about you and a faction. It always works. You've never been in a bad faction. I love to see Brock Anderson with like a breath of fresh air, second opportunity, and then being with C.W. Anderson, that whole lineage there. What's that like? Because that thing has legs to me, Bobby. That thing, I think your group has an opportunity to take over the place. You already have, but I think it has longevity. How do you see it?
I see it the same way. I was like chomping at the bit when that opportunity was presented. Man, I grew up watching NWA the Crockett years. So like Arn and Tully were the basis of what Red Dragon was with me and Kyle. Like I cannot understate. For me, my favorite match in NXT was AOP with Paul Ellering, of all people, on the floor. We were in Philadelphia against Kyle and myself. For me, that was Kyle and I got to be Tully and Arn and face the Road Warriors with Paul Ellering on the floor. That was like living out a childhood dream. So to be paired now with CW and Brock, and I've known Brock's dad previously, and he's the enforcer. I mean, the legend that he is, and I have such appreciation for everything that he did, because that was part of my childhood, such a integral part of my fandom. Even the Brainbusters run, like, who are we kidding? Sean and Marty against the Brainbusters, like some of those matches on MSG, which I'm from New York. That's the stuff I got to see. Just mind-boggling to me that same kid from upstate New York is now helping the son of the enforcer. What?
And that's
the way I see this, is this thing is going to be a vehicle for Brock and BRG to grow. And man, with where I am in my career, and then furthermore with my life, this is what I want. I realized, like, all these years I've been around my peers, and everybody kind of knows the same stuff. But once you start to get around some of the younger cats coming up, you realize, some of this stuff that I take for granted, people don't know. And it needs to be passed on, because a lot of it's not even my knowledge. It's guys like Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard and William Regal and Fit Finley. Those are the people whose knowledge I'm passing on. Like, how dare I bogart that? You know, so this has given me an opportunity. The Rogue Horseman gives me and CW another one with just a wealth of knowledge we can pour in. And that's, man, that's exciting.
Well, you're sharing this knowledge elsewhere as well, because you're working now as a coach, helping out in a gym down there in Florida, in a wrestling school down there in Florida. How did that come about? How is that treating you?
I am, actually. And, man, I love it. I love it. House of Champions. It's in Longwood. It's a suburb of Orlando, Florida. It's a wrestling school. And Jamie Stanley, he and his wife own the school. Kakoa is their head trainer. He and I go back to like the New England area back in the day. So just all incredible people. And they have an incredible facility, top notch. I've not seen, the only places I could compare to this would be the Performance Center itself, or then there's actually, I forgot to mention this. I've also been fortunate enough to be a part-time coach, the Dark Arts Wrestling Academy in Plant City, Florida. That's Malachi Black. He owns that and he runs that out of Plant City. And whenever I'm in Tampa, because my business manager lives in Tampa, whenever I'm in Tampa, I go in and help out with the Dark Arts. And again, that's another place where the facility, I mean, Tom's been, or Malachi's been, a very smart man with his earnings over the years, and he's pouring back into the business in a way that, like, I don't know many who have done what he's doing. So, yeah, both of those places, I have to give a big shout out to the Dark Arts, Plant City, Florida, closer to Tampa area, and then the House of Champions, Longwood, Florida. It's a suburb of Orlando. Both, if you're looking to train to wrestle, I can't think of a better place. And on top of that, like, you get the professor, you get the most educated feet in professional wrestling himself. That's me.
Yes. We figured, yes. Bobby. We figured it was.
Unless that's you guys. Unless one of you guys have that copyrighted.
No, we don't.
We want to stay legal here.
Lucha Apocalypto is going to be at the Cicero Stadium in Chicago. You can watch it on YouTube on Saturday. I'll be there at Cicero Stadium to check it out. I'm wondering, Bobby, and I know the audience knows this, but I think it has to be said out loud. Every time you take the mic, it's calculated. You're not rushing through your promo. Every time you wrestle, it's a must watch because you're not trying to rush through your match. Everything's calculated. You stop, you do your move, you stop. And so I just want to know how difficult that is to impart on your students or people that come to see you, because a lot of guys want to go a million miles a minute, but you, it lasts because you are making sure that we understand the moments. How difficult is that to tell today's wrestlers that, hey, don't rush to your promo and take your time in the ring. You don't have to flip 100 times to get over.
Mm-hmm. You know, the ironic thing is I find myself repeating things that were told to me when I was in my younger days, and I didn't necessarily absorb them. I heard them, but I didn't actually get them. And then I did years later. So I'm hoping that I try to subdue some of my frustration at times, trying to get what's in my head out of my mouth. Try to subdue that frustration by understanding that, hey, some of this, you got to be patient. You know, I'm a Christian, and so I believe everything is on his schedule, not ours. And sometimes what we think is not turning out the way we want is only our lack of patience. So I try to remember that, hey, some of what I say today might not make sense, but 6 months from now, 3 years from now, I don't know, it may click. And when that, if that happens, then I did my job, you know? So yeah, I try to take it with a grain of salt and understand that, like, it's all, to me, the best way that you can go out and wrestle is rhythm. There's a rhythm in the ring. There's a rhythm to, I do a lot of, stand-up martial arts, a lot of Muay Thai, boxing. And I tell clients and people that take the classes, like, it's rhythm. You don't just stand and punch the bag. You punch the bag, you move your head, then you move your feet. And there's a rhythm to that. And I look at pro wrestling the exact same way. Now you have your, you know, there's things that you're working towards, but working is all about rhythm.
Bobby, we certainly appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing you in Chicago. Best of luck going forward with MLW and all the other endeavors you find yourself in.
Yeah, gentlemen, I can't say thank you enough. I really appreciate it. And I don't know if you two know this, but you're looking at the next MLW World Heavyweight Champion, Kojima. I've been really curbing my language. Is this is a family friendly, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I'll keep it clean. But Kojima is in trouble. He is in trouble because nobody really saw this coming, but I did. And that's the thing. And you said it before, sir. I come off calculated. I come off manufactured and well thought out. And that's the truth. That's what it is. There is not a thing that I do that does not have, that is not backed up with a why. And my why will be completely apparent come this weekend. And the recipient of that is going to be Kojima, unfortunately for him. The Japanese legend that he is, I got to put him down.
That's cool, man. Hey, watch out for Kojima, but definitely watch out for Court Bauer. He'll have you. He'll take your wallet. Careful.
Well... We're going to keep him away from my wallet. It's a good thing I don't carry a wallet. I do have a money clip, though. I'll keep him away from that.
All right. That's going to be tougher to grab. That's going to be a little tougher to nab. Bobby, thank you so much, man.
More slippery. Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Gabe, nothing surprises me. Of course he's got a money clip. He's Bobby Fish. Of course he does. Of course he does.
There you go.
Enjoyed our time with Bobby Fish as he joined us here on GKW. Again, the MLW Lucha Apocalypto is going to be in Cicero in Chicago coming up on Saturday. And I know you are going to be there, Hoodie.
I'm there covering for Good Karma Wrestling, of course. And so we will take a look and see what that card's like. It's MLW, Gabe, as you well know, just like some of these other companies, have to be able to come to the forefront. I mean, WWE, AEW is doing well. Everyone, I think, in wrestling is doing well from attendance and money standpoint. For MLW, though, they won the lawsuit from WWE. So whenever they're ready to take that next step, they have an opportunity. I think they're doing well, but 2025, hopefully they'll be able to take several steps to move forward in the wrestling landscape.
Cody Rhodes this past week, as we move on to number three this week, Cody Rhodes giving an interview talking about his time, you know, really a lot of different things that they covered. But he also talked about at length his decision not to win the AEW championship. And he made it clear that it was his decision in his feud against Chris Jericho in his early time in AEW that he would put in the stipulation if he lost the feud, he would never be able to contend for the AEW World Championship. Kind of talked about how, yeah, maybe things end up being a little bit different if he, you know, doesn't put that stipulation in because he didn't want to go back on it. And he just felt like, hey, I'm an EVP. I don't want, you know, to be accused of, oh, politicking my way to the championship. If he didn't put that stipulation on there and eventually became the AEW world champion, which I believe he would have, how different would things have been for AEW and for Cody had he actually won that world championship?
Maybe Gabe doesn't leave.
Yeah, that's the biggest what if to me is I'm wondering if he actually ever leaves.
Now, knowing the Rhodes lineage, especially his dad, there's times where Dusty knew, okay, I need to leave the territory because how can you miss me if I don't go away? So same thing with working with Eddie Graham in Florida. He went to work for Crockett. After his time with Crockett, he worked for Vince in the polka dots, came back, worked for WCW after 3 years. So it's not like and we've heard this in shoot promos before on Cody Rhodes. You know how the Rhodes are. They always leave. They always go from place to place. But, you know, I thought that was a mistake. So what are we going to say, Gabe? What are we going to say on Good Karma Wrestling? If Cody Rhodes makes himself, or if Tony Khan makes him the champion, what's he gonna say? What are we gonna say? Like, Cody is the biggest babyface in the company. He deserves to be the heavyweight champion. No one's gonna say, "Oh, look at this guy. He's one of the EVPs." Hell, the Young Bucks were just tag team champions. Did we say anything about that? So I don't know why he thought that. I think that was a strange move by Cody.
Yeah, he was obviously very conscious of that, didn't want to be accused of that. And look, I understand wanting to do that early, right? And again, I remember when the stipulation happened, just kind of feeling like, oh, this is kind of weird. Like, I don't know. I don't think I like this. Like, because you didn't think that Jericho was going to lose. It just didn't feel like Jericho was going to lose that early into his title reign. And it's like, well, I mean, I guess everybody goes back on their word in wrestling, but I also had a hard time believing that Cody would actually then go back on that and someday, you know, challenge for the AEW World Championship. So that to me is probably the biggest what if in AEW history. Because if he doesn't leave, you know, I don't think he reaches the heights that he's at now within AEW, because as he mentioned in this interview, like, the crowd was starting to turn on him in AEW. Maybe we would have gotten Cody in a heel run in AEW, and maybe he's a heel champion, and maybe that's how they could have potentially gotten to go off and go back on his word as a heel to eventually become champion. But the landscape would be wildly different without Cody Rhodes in AEW without Cody Rhodes in WWE if he never leaves AEW.
You know, this is when the internet wrestling community has too much power, to me. What I mean by that is that Cody clearly is looking at the dirt sheet to internet wrestling community saying, I know I'm one of the founders of AEW along with the Young Bucks and Kenny, and if I put the championship on myself, people will look down on me. It's wrestling. It's been going on forever. Vern put the title on himself in AWA. Bill Watts has done it. A lot of the promoters have put the championship on them. You know why they did that? Vince put it on himself, yes. And you know why they did that? Because they could trust themselves more so than the boys. That's why. If I put the championship – I mean, hey, Jeff Jarrett did it.
Yeah.
As much as you and I got tired of seeing Jeff Jarrett as TNA champion, you know what he did? He goes, I'm not sure about these rest of these guys, but I'm the champion. I ain't going nowhere. And so if he's the champion, people would look at him and say, well, that's the biggest baby face in the company. Of course he should be champion. But the internet wrestling community, and by the way, the internet wrestling community was all over AEW, because we talked about it in our infancy of this show, how many AEW fans were booing Cody Rhodes, booing his promo.
A lot of them.
Booing his matches, where he set himself on fire just to get over. You remember this, right? The burning
table. Yeah.
Set himself on fire to get over. Does he have to do that in WWE? No, because they respect Cody Rhodes, and he's on his John Cena schedule, and they respect him. So he ain't worried about the internet wrestling community there. But there, put myself on fire, dive off of cages. So, you know, I'll never be a heel. I'll never be the champion. Love me, love me, love me. And they still said no. He goes to WWE. They love him because he's just him.
I think the biggest thing in the first 5 years. Like, if there's – because WWE puts out documentaries all the time. And who knows when everybody's actually going to be willing to sit down and want to tell the truth. I want to know what happened with Cody Rhodes in AEW. He hasn't really said it. You know, he said, hey, it was a personal issue. I decided I needed to leave. But there's something else that just doesn't seem right. And I want to know what – I'm curious, as a wrestling fan, what that is. I don't know when we're ever going to get that story. I know eventually we will. At some point, Cody's going to be willing to talk, because Cody also knows that he doesn't want to burn a bridge and talk about something publicly, because I still think there's a very good chance he ends up back in AEW at some point. You know, I think that is a realistic possibility, that he has a big homecoming in AEW. Now, who knows when that ends up being, but I think there's a realistic possibility, and he knows better than to burn that bridge. So I'm really curious. That's the next wrestling documentary I want to see, is what happened with Cody Rhodes at AEW.
How about we do the math, you and I? Let's do the math.
Okay.
All the interviews that you and I have seen, it hasn't been many with Cody.
No.
But has he ever broken bad against the Young Bucks or Kenny? Has he ever said something bad? Okay, so it's not the founders. And I think that for you and I to cover sports as much as we do, usually it's an issue with a front office. A player has a problem with a general manager or an owner. And I'm wondering, is this a CM Punk Triple H dynamic where there was a disconnect between Cody and Tony Khan at some point?
It wouldn't be shocking. you know, it wouldn't be shocking. And, you know, and he kind of addressed it here about, you know, and he even mentioned, like, everybody's got their own story of how AEW started and, you know, how much they had, you know, how much value or say they had in the company's very beginnings. But yeah, I don't think he's ever broken bad against the Bucks. He's never broken bad against Kenny. I mean, he hasn't really broken bad against TK either, but he has also avoided kind of talking about TK. Like, he's talked about the boys. He's talked about a lot of things in AEW. I don't think he's talked about Tony Khan.
That's where I think the breadcrumbs lead. And maybe when he returns, and I agree, he will come, but it's what the roads do. He'll be in WWE. It's not like he's going to fall out of favor, but he will leave the territory, as they say in the wrestling parlance. And he'll go back, and we might get answers then. But I feel like it's a problem between the way Tony Khan ran things and how Cody saw the future of AEW. I'm just speculating. I've not asked. I don't have any connections to Cody Rhodes, so I wouldn't know. Maybe people around him, but I haven't really fished to ask what's going on with that or what, you know, what the disconnect was. But I got a feeling it might be ownership.
Yeah, that's the one thing that makes the most sense. But again, I think he doesn't leave if he wins that AEW title. And we'll have to see if Cody continues to leave breadcrumbs as we continue. We move on to news and notes this week. A lot of different things to dive into in the world of professional wrestling. And we begin with a couple of guys, Bruce Pritchard and Michael Hayes, on leave of absence currently with the WWE, although a couple of different personal issues, reportedly nothing to do with, you know, any sort of connections or ties with the ongoing litigation that's up for Vince McMahon, but both are currently on leave within WWE.
So from Wrestling Observer, they say that for Michael Hayes, it's a personal issue. We got to keep our eyes on that because he's had to leave before because of personal issues in the past. So it's always been that. And on the other side with Bruce, he says it's a medical emergency that's happening in his family. His wife suffered with cancer for a while, his wife, Stephanie. And I don't know if it's about her or if it's about him, but all the best to both of those guys. It's just, I think it's unfortunate timing. I know when it first came out, people thought, oh my God, the old guard's getting out of there. No, they're important to the company. Triple H has got it handled, but Michael Hayes is essential to that company on SmackDown, and Bruce is just the guy that you talk to and just say, hey, how'd the old man do it? You know, that kind of thing. So hopefully all the best to both of those guys.
Well, there are three names that are no longer with WWE that we're familiar with. Baron Corbin, Indy Hartwell, and Tegan Nox all released or told that their contracts were not going to be renewed by WWE. This was after we recorded last week. And this news broke last Friday, which was interesting for Indy because that was a pre-taped SmackDown because they were in Saudi Arabia, and she ended up, after the news of her release came out, had a tag match that televised on SmackDown. But those three no longer going to be with WWE.
This show has talked about these releases for a long time. And the theme of what we talk about with these releases is always the same. You don't have to release this talent. Why do you do that? You don't need budget cuts in WWE. You've got TKO, pal. You're doing just fine. Baron Corbin, since we have to talk about them in retrospect, now they're no longer there. It's dumb for them to be cut, but they're cut. Baron Corbin proved to me, Gabe, over the last few years that he belongs. When he first came on the scene, you know, solid. But I think this last few years, whether it's NXT or WWE, the character development with Bum Corbin, the guy that was Rich Corbin, Happy Corbin,
Bum Corbin.
The tag team champion or the championships he won at NXT, I think that he came a long way. And for him to be cut, to say they have nothing for him, makes no sense. Tegan Nox was always on the shelf, wasn't she? Did she always have a knee issue? Okay. And the third person was who, did you say?
Indy Hartwell.
She was at a great wedding.
Like, but she, the thing with Indy didn't make sense. And yes, maybe she was, you know, kind of a secondary piece, but like I said, she's been on television quite a bit recently. Like, she had a televised match and then you released her. That one was the one that made the least amount of sense to me. Is like, I mean, she hasn't been up on that main roster all that long. And the fact that she was released, I feel like she's been on TV, but okay, I guess she's the one you want to release. It just didn't make any sense to me.
I just, I was just wondering, why didn't you cut the fat on NXT? That's usually what it is. Like, people that's been in the system, it just hasn't worked, and you want to kind of streamline your developmental system, that's fine. But I think that even though we don't think they should have been cut, Gabe, the bottom line is that with this WWE ID and also all these indies, they'll be fine. They can make their own schedule now. And so they've already made a lot of money. I think all three of them have. Definitely Baron Corbin has. But others will find a way to still perform in indies.
Sticking with the WWE, they released that their next European tour is going to be a part of the run-up to WrestleMania, on the road to WrestleMania, with a lot of shows that are happening overseas just a few weeks before Mania. So your idea of people don't care if it's pre-taped, they're still going to tune in, is certainly going to be put to the test in the run-up to the biggest show of the year.
Think about that business model from a sports standpoint, right? I don't know if any other sport could do that. could you imagine the NFL just sending all the teams in different places around the country and at their home stadium? Not like Jacksonville, like in London, staying there. I'm talking about like, we're going to have ramp up to the Super Bowl, so all the playoffs will be in Germany.
The divisional round is now going to be in London. What?
Could you imagine that? You want to see your team? You got to travel to London to see your team. Could you imagine? Puerto Rico.
But then they don't air it live. Like, well, the only way you can watch the Packers in the divisional round is on tape delay.
That's crazy, man. It just shows you how big the WWE is and the influence of TKO. No, they're going to be WrestleMania's in Vegas, sure, but they're saying we're going to do the UFC model. We're going to be everywhere else. We don't have to have a show in Columbus, Ohio, or we have a show in Lexington, Kentucky, to lead up to WrestleMania anymore. So you know all of those crowds are going to be bananas. There's going to be great. Everywhere they go, they're going to have great crowd response. And then they're going to go right into Vegas, and that's going to be great too. So completely different business model. Pretty smart from WWE.
Meanwhile, New Japan Pro Wrestling announcing that Ricochet is going to be taking on Zack Sabre Jr. in an upcoming match. Also, it appears that they are building for a return for Kenny Omega. So it looks like Omega is getting closer and closer to returning, and a lot of speculation revolving around he is going to be back in Japan in early January as well.
Let me ask you a question, Gabe Neitzel. If you're Tony Khan, don't you want that return to your company?
Yes. But I think because they're running the show in the Tokyo Dome the day after Wrestle Kingdom. So whatever that AEW show is called, I'm blanking on it now. I think he might be returning because it's a co-branded, New Japan and AEW show in Japan. Maybe that's the return instead of him returning at Wrestle Kingdom, or maybe he works both things. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's Gabe Kidd, and that's a New Japan match. I just know that for me, I want him in my company. We're going to be on the same platform, you know, in the same country. I'm just saying, like, somebody from the Don Callis family against Kenny Omega. I mean, but I guess that's down the line. I guess. I don't know. But the first thing you said was interesting as well, right? What's happening in Japan with Ricochet.
Yeah, I mean, and Zack Sabre Jr.
That's going to be crazy. That's going to be unbelievable. And Ricochet is exactly who we thought he would be. He was great in WWE. He's great in AEW. But I'd like to know, by the time we get to January, is he a babyface or a heel? Is he going to be with the Hurt Syndicate?
That's the big question. I think there's a good chance he ends up with the Hurt Syndicate.
I thought it was going to be Hobbs last night. I thought he was going to flip and then be part of that. But then, you know, you got Lashley and Hobbs. Who's beating them?
Well, maybe Brian Cage and Lance Archer.
Oh, man. You talk about meat.
Yeah. That's meat. All right, Hoodie, what were your matches of the week?
No particular order, Gabe. Thunder Rosa against Harley Cameron.
That was like so much better than it had any right of being. I really enjoyed it. Harley Cameron, for a short little feud there, Harley Cameron did tremendous work.
That's the best Harley Cameron match we've seen. That is for sure. You can thank Thunder Rosa for that. Thunder Rosa, I tell you, every time she has these matches, it's not just one fall, 15 minutes. It's got to be something bananas. And so I thought that was great. I thought that, let's go back here. Cody and Gunther was the best match I saw at Crown Jewel.
Okay. I had Bronson versus Seth. I liked Bronson versus Seth. I just like the way that that whole thing laid out. And I like that it's not over.
And it made Bronson stronger, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It made him stronger because even though he takes the three count, he stands right up and he's bleeding. And Seth Rollins looks back and goes, what the heck? What is wrong with you?
Yep.
What? So that makes Bronson even stronger. And then we move forward and we see, again, he's still splashing guys and tsunamiing wrestlers.
Oh, God. That table just exploded that he tsunamied Seth through on Monday night.
Jeez. He's over. Doesn't need a title. He's just over right now. That's exactly what he needed. Fletcher against Commander, also on
from Collision.
LA Knight, Andrade, and Carmelo is exactly what Carmelo and Andrade needed. They needed LA Knight, and I thought that match delivered.
And I will throw in there from Monday Night Raw, I thought Dragon Lee versus Chad Gable was very good. I really enjoyed that match. Shocking that you put Chad Gable in a match with somebody else who can wrestle, and it comes out to be a really good product. So a lot of different options. Again, even though you had the premium live events, I don't think that's necessarily dominated everything. If you happen to miss any of our shows, or if you want to check us out, make sure you check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. All of our interviews are up there. Make sure you check out our guy, Jonathan Hood, as he's on Busted Open on Sirius XM each Sunday from 9 until noon Eastern time. We should have the band back together. Yeah, that is you. I look forward. I listen every Sunday if I'm driving around. I enjoyed throwing that thing on. I was listening on my way up to Green Bay this last week. So we had, we were missing our guy Browitz this week, but the entire band should be back together next week right here on GKW.